is going to be such an exciting day. I hope you enjoy it. I think you will.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Hello and good morning. Welcome. Welcome back, rather, to the Patrick Madrid Show. Here's that number, 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. That number is sponsored by Catholic Order of Foresters, by the way. And I'm here for you. So if you need a second opinion, or you'd like to talk something through, or you heard something you disagree with, or what have you, that's the number to call to be on the air. And emails can go to patrick@relevantradio.com. I have one that came in this morning. And this is actually a follow-up to an email that came in last week. You may remember this one, Cyrus. This is Mary in Phoenix. Do you remember her? And she was saying that she, you know, personally didn't like abortion. She had had one long in the past, but she felt like she was imposing her religious beliefs if she told someone else that abortion is wrong.
Right. And yeah.
Remember her?
I do remember that. Yeah. Who am I to, you know, tell someone else?
Right. Yeah. And we had what I thought was a really good conversation, and she thinks so too. But she was kind enough to send a follow-up email, and we, by the way, put that into a social media format. So if you want to hear it, share it, put it on Facebook, social media, it's available in the, is it Powerful Moments on the website?
I think so. I was just going there now, so I'll let you know in just a sec.
Okay, good. And if you didn't hear that call with Mary, I would recommend it because it was very interesting and we got into a lot of very good topics. So Cyrus will tell us in a minute where that's found. But anyway, so Mary was kind enough to write a follow-up. Dear Patrick, thank you so much for patiently walking me through the reasons why abortion is evil. I knew I had to call you to be able to understand that from a rational and moral point of view, not just a religious point of view. You mentioned slavery and why racism that justified slavery is wrong. She says, I would propose we could also use the word sizism, S-I-Z-E-I-S-M, sizism, to explain why abortion is wrong. The value of human life shouldn't depend upon how big it is. Life begins at conception. That's it. So that's the essence of her email. And she signs off saying, I'll be taking your advice to heart. Thanks for all you do, Patrick. Love Cyrus too, she says. Aww. So that's nice, Mary.
And I did find this. This is under the best of the week.
Okay.
And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to repost it to Twitter right now to make it easy for anyone that wants to go back and listen to that.
Excellent, excellent, excellent. Well, good. I appreciate that. Thank you. Oh, and I also see as I'm looking at the show page, relevantradio.com/Patrick, I don't know if this is a step in the right direction with Twitter, but I see that the commentary or the discussion we had a couple of days ago about the so-called divine will movement and a couple of articles that offered critiques of the problems in the Louisa Picaretta writings. It is up there now. So I don't know who did what, but it's now there. So that's good. And when you post this new one, Cyrus, I'm going to refresh just to see if it shows up there as well. And if it does, it means that anyone who wants something that we post on the Twitter feed can go directly to the show page. Let's keep our fingers crossed. relevantradio.com/Patrick. All right. Good times, good vibes. Let's go to Marty in Mejia, Texas. Good morning, Marty. Welcome.
Good morning, Mr. Madrid.
Yes, sir.
I'm calling because I'm just looking for some advice. I'm trying to sort out my feelings on the situation and see if maybe you have some recommendations that I haven't gone over in my own head.
Sure, I'll try.
Over at my job, we recently hired this young man, 19, and he's I work at a factory, and it's, fast moving and, requires, the machines require a lot of attention, especially whenever, everything, a lot of things are automated. So if there's an issue, we need to hop on it real quick. Mm-hmm. This young man, he seems like he's both physically and mentally incapable of doing the job. I believe he's special needs of some type.
Okay.
And, he's kind of been a liability for us, mm-hmm. slowing us down, and everyone's got to hop on and help him to carry the weight, make sure mm-hmm. we keep production going, you know, how factories work.
Yeah.
And it's his first day was the other day, and it was an issue immediately. And now it seems like they're looking for a reason to fire him, mm-hmm. and because, you know, have a just reason to be able to do it. And I could tell the supervisors are kind of torn about it, too. And I really don't think that there's anything available, you know, office work or anything else that you could do around the factory or anything like that. Mm-hmm.
Tell me, Marty, is this factory tight on money? Is it just barely making it, or are they doing well and cranking out product and life is good? In other words, does every penny count in this place, or are they doing well because I have an alternative that I could suggest to you?
Well, I think any factory is really, you know, trying to make sure they're keeping profits as high as possible.
Sure.
You know, I would say
that's not what I mean. Yeah, I'm sorry. Maybe I wasn't clear. What I meant is, like, are they just barely breaking even or barely making it, or is it a successful factory?
It's been successful in the past, but about 2 years ago, it got bought out by a big corporation, and our line is kind of like the big line that that has the biggest clients.
Okay.
And lately, we've been kind of we're on the verge of losing clients because of some production issues that we've ran into.
Would his lack of performance be part of why you're losing? I know he's just started, but I mean, would that play into losing business, losing customers?
It could if it keeps up like this.
Okay. So your quandary, if I can jump ahead and guess, is how to handle this situation? What can you do, or what should you do?
Well, really, the big thing is I feel bad for the kid. My priority is kind of sorting out my feelings because the kid is trying to earn an honest living. And I shouldn't even call him a kid. He's a young man, you know. Yeah, sort out my own feelings about the situation because I do feel bad for him, you know. He's trying to earn an honest living. But at the same time, you know, if you do have any recommendations I could possibly bring up, you know, I feel like they jumped the gun on hiring him without fully knowing his capabilities.
Okay, I have a couple thoughts that come to mind, not knowing anything more than what you just described to me. First of all, kudos to you for trying to look out for this guy. It's good of you to have that, you know, charity toward him. There may or may not be anything you can do, but a few thoughts come to mind. Let's look at it on the positive side first. And that would be maybe you could talk to the boss, whoever makes these decisions, and say, you know, this guy, he's got some disadvantages. If he can't do this job at this place, probably he's going to have a tough time getting a job at most places. What if we did this? What if we went the extra mile for him just to show Christian charity and give him a broom and say, you know, it's not working out to do the job on the line, but we found another job for you. If you want to be, you know, the guy who's in charge of making sure that everything is clean and sharp and tidy, and here's your broom, and this is what you do. That could save some dignity for him, save face. He wouldn't get fired. He could have a job that presumably wouldn't be beyond him. I mean, sweeping floors is not difficult. So that's one option. Maybe you could be the change agent who would intercede for him. He wouldn't even have to know that you're doing this. And you might be able to get him a more appropriate job so that he doesn't lose face and lose his job. One option. Think about that. The other option on the negative side would be to let nature take its course. And maybe you can, in an avuncular sort of way, let him know, you know, you could lose your job if you don't do this or that or stop doing this or that. I'm happy to help you. You know, if you want a little coaching, if you want a little bit of expert advice, I'm happy to give it to you. But I just want to give you a heads up that if you keep going in this direction, you're probably going to lose your job. And I know that you don't want that. And then see if he would like your help. And maybe he would. And you can give him a good kind of big brother helping hand to help him do what he needs. But if he does get fired in the long run, there is something to be said for learning a lesson. And even though from your perspective, it would be sad and you feel bad for the guy, sometimes in order to learn how to be successful in the world, you have to fail a few times. And often that will get somebody's attention. Now, obviously, it runs the risk of demoralizing him to the point where he might just give up. We hope that that doesn't happen. But that's another outcome that wouldn't necessarily be bad. And I'll give you an example from my own experience, Marty. When I was a teenager, so I think I was maybe at the time, maybe 16, maybe 15. I'm not sure if I was driving yet. And somebody in the parish or something, they heard that I was looking for a job that I could make some more money. So there was a guy who had a key manufacturing plant in like a business park near where I lived. And he said, hey, so-and-so called me and said you were looking for a job. And, you know, if you could work 3-4 hours a day, I've got a job. You basically make keys at a machine. And come on down if you're interested. And I was. And I think minimum wage at the time was like a couple of bucks, $2.50 an hour, something like that, maybe less. And I think he was going to offer me like double that, like $5 an hour or something more than I could get working anywhere else. So I was real excited about this. And I worked for about an hour and I got fired because it was a, even though it sounds simple, you had to put this metal key blank into a machine and you had to hold it there a certain way and let it do what it did. And then you create this key. And I, for some reason, I couldn't concentrate on it properly, or I was just clumsy, or I'm not even sure what it was that, you know, that caused it. But the guy said, you know what, I really appreciate you coming in to give it a try. I'm going to pay you for a full day. And he paid me, but he says, you're clearly not, this is not for you. This is not, you know. And I don't remember if I didn't crank out enough of these in an hour, like I was way below the quota, or I don't remember exactly what it was. But he did me a favor, because even though I felt like, oh, that could have been a great job, I could have earned double the money, would have been good, he actually did me a favor by letting me go, because I realized I've got to be sharp and I've got to work hard and I've got to be, you know, all the things that might be needed for a job like that. It taught me a lesson, and I'm glad that I learned that lesson. So that could be another outcome for this young man. What do you think, Marty?
Yeah. And, you know, like I said, he has his mental prowess, I guess you could say, seems like it's probably the biggest hindrance, because
I understand that. What I'm saying, though, is we're kind of at a fork in the road. You can approach it from the standpoint, do you want to be his guardian angel? Do you want to get in there and try to help him if that's possible? Maybe it is, maybe it's not. Do you want to just let nature take its course? When you talk about sorting out your own emotions, I understand what you mean. You feel sorry for the guy. And you wish it weren't this way, but it is. So at this point, if I were in your situation, the way I would try to sort out my emotions would be to take action one way or the other and see what happened. You know, that way at least you know you tried to do something to help him. If it didn't work, sometimes that's just how it is. You can't change it. Some people, I remember I was in retail. This comes to my mind too. I was a manager in a retail store, and I had to hire several new people to work in a store that was being opened. And a couple of them I really liked, and we worked well together, and they seemed like really sharp people. But the company had a test you had to take that determined what kind of personality you had. And I was shocked when the company told me, you got to let this guy go. Well, why? He's my best worker. He does a great job. Yeah, but he failed the test. And his profile tells us that he might steal. And I said, that's ridiculous. But I didn't have a choice in the matter. So I had to let the guy go. And it was it was hard for me because I liked him. We got along well. I thought he was fine, but I had no choice. And sometimes life is just like that. You just have to deal with it. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yes, sir. I completely understand.
So give it some thought. I think it's great that you want to look out for him. I think it's really charitable of you. So if I were in your position, I think I would opt in favor of the guardian angel role. Can I talk to somebody? Can we give him a different kind of job? Can we figure out a way to not have to fire him? I see a lot of upside there.
Yes, sir. In fact, I might go. I work nights, and so I've lost sleep tonight. I get home at 3 a.m. and it's 8 a.m. right now over where I live, and that means that the factory's probably open back up. So I might go over there and talk to the person who hired him right now.
I think that's a great idea, and you'll feel better too. I think it'll help you sort out your own emotions about this.
Yeah, I just don't want to do any. I just don't want the inaction to really eat at me.
I concur. Doing something is better than doing nothing, and that way you won't look back later and say, "Gee, I wish I had helped that kid."
Yes, sir. Yeah, and it seems like he seems kind of. I'm the one that's kind of been, making sure that he's hopping on things and all that stuff. So I think the kid has an affinity for me.
Yeah, that's good. I hope that this has a very positive outcome. I really do. And I think you're doing a good Christian deed to try to help this young man. Say a little prayer that it works. Thanks, Marty. I'll be right back. Today, we'd like to thank Rosario, who is listening in New Mexico, for donating her 2014 Fiat 500. Classy. You can join thousands of other listeners in donating old vehicles, trucks, boats, and RVs by visiting relevantradio.com/car. That's relevantradio.com/car.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Have a question? Give Patrick a call, 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid on Relevant Radio.
Let's see. The phones are waiting. Let's go to Annalise and Theo in Murrieta, California. Good morning, boy and girl.
Good morning.
This must be Annalise.
Good morning. Right? Yes.
Okay, good morning. Welcome.
Hi. I'm wondering if you can help me understand the Holy Trinity better.
That's a really big topic. I'll do what I can. I'll do my best. What can you tell me about the Trinity right now that you already know, Annalise?
So I know that there are three persons in one God, and I just need help understanding the part where, like, how three persons in one God came to be,
Yeah, exactly. Why don't we start there? So this has to do with God's eternal existence, and this might be a good place to build up from. So unlike everything else in the universe, you, me, this planet, the galaxy, the universe itself, and everything in it, all the stars, it's every single thing that's in the universe, including the universe itself, all of these things came into existence by something that came before it. So we all have a cause. You came because your mom and dad got married, and so they had you as their child, and same with Theo, your younger brother. And your parents were born from their parents, and their parents were born from their parents, and so on, all the way back to Adam and Eve. But they were on this planet, and this planet didn't always exist. It was caused by probably some exploding star or two planets collided, and over eons of time, the debris from the explosion coalesced into what became our planet, and it cooled down, all of those things over a long period of time. But no matter how far back you go, you find that everything was caused by something before it, and something outside of it. Nothing comes into existence on its own. Everything that exists has some cause, except for one being, and that's God. Because if God didn't always exist as God, never having been created, not coming into existence, not receiving his being or his existence from something or someone before him, then nothing could exist. So let's pause and think about that for a minute. If everything has a cause, and everything that exists can be traced back to something that caused it to exist, is it possible that there could just be this endless number of things that do exist and nothing at the very beginning that always existed that was the starting point for that? Would that make any sense to you?
No.
No. So that's a good little philosophical... What's that little scratching sound you're making? Can you hear that?
Or is it just yeah, sorry.
Phone? Yeah. Because those background noises could be distracting for people listening. So there's the first part. So God has always existed. Nobody created God. God is the source of all things that exist. So now that we know that, we can therefore begin to wonder, well, what kind of being is God? Well, God is infinite. You know that word, right? Infinite?
Yep.
Okay. And what that means is there's no limit. Like, there's no limit to what he knows. There's no limit to his power. He's all powerful, all knowing, all good, all holy, all beautiful. All the things we can say about God, that he is good and beautiful and powerful and loving. He has those, he is those perfections, you might say, in that there's no limitation. It doesn't run out after a certain point. But for you and for me, it does. So, like, there is a limit to what you know. Like, you don't know calculus yet, right? Or geometry or some of those higher.
No.
Yeah. But you will eventually probably learn something about that. But right now you don't have that. So you have limits on what you know. And you have limits on what you can do, right? It would be nice if you could fly, but you can't fly, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So that's a limit. With God, there are no limits. Anything that's consistent with his nature as all good, all knowing, etc., he has no limits. So this is where it gets interesting. From all eternity, God knows himself infinitely because he himself is infinite. So that means that his knowledge of himself is like a carbon copy, you might say, or almost like a reflection in a mirror. Like when you go into the bathroom and you see your reflection in the mirror, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so it's kind of like that, but it's even more than that. And I'll give you an example of what I mean. Imagine for a moment, in your mind, try to think of what you are. Think, get a mental image of yourself, what you look like, how tall you are, what your voice sounds like, what you like to do, what classes in school you like, what's your favorite food. You know what I'm saying? Can you right now get an idea in your mind of you?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you have that idea in your mind right now?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, is that idea that you have of yourself, is that you? Or is that an idea of you?
An idea of me?
Right. Right. So it's distinct from you. It's not you, but isn't it true that that idea of you is in you? It's in your mind. It's not over there across the room. It's in you. Yeah. It's part of you, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So here's the next and the last step. For the Trinity, three gods or three persons in one God, what we're trying to do our best to understand is how God from all eternity knows himself infinitely, and that infinite self-knowledge the Bible calls the Word of God. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. This is John chapter 1, verses 1 through 4. And it says in verse 14, and the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. Who's that talking about? The Word became flesh.
Jesus.
Jesus, right. So the second person of the Trinity is called the Word of God. Not verses 1 through 4, just verse 1. And what this means is that from all eternity, God knows himself infinitely, and that Word that God has of himself, the mirror image, the concept of himself, is co-eternal with God, And God the Father, we're speaking about here. And because this takes place from all eternity, it means that he's distinct from God, but he's not separate from God. He shares the divine nature, one God. You can't have a second infinite God because the one God wouldn't be the other God. There's some limitation there. So they're not separated by nature. It's one nature, and that eternal knowledge of himself that the Father has, we call the Son. The Bible does too, and the Bible also says the Word. And then the third person, the Holy Spirit, is the love, the infinite love between the Father and the Son. Not like a force field. It's not like the wind or an electrical current or some inanimate force. It's actually the third person who knows and loves the Father, the Son, the Spirit, knowing and loving each other from all eternity. Now, what I've given you here is just a scratch on the surface. It's a huge, very profound topic that is beyond our human ability to understand the magnitude of it. We can understand some things about it, but that's at least a way to start thinking about the Blessed Trinity as one God by nature, three persons in that one God, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit from all eternity. Does that help a little bit?
Yes, it does. Yes, it does.
I'm glad. Well, when you get older, maybe, I don't know, in another couple years, maybe now, if you like to read, there's a good book called Theology for Beginners by Frank Sheed. And maybe your mom and dad would get that book for you at some point. He has a really good and much deeper than I just gave you explanation of the Trinity. So if you, when you feel you're ready to read that, I would recommend that book.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. I hope that you... This is a big topic, and believe me, Annalise, there are a lot of adults who really don't know very much, if anything, about it. So you actually now know more than many adults do if they never really study this. So that's good for you.
Thanks.
You're welcome. Well, I'm glad you like that. So think about it, pray about it, ask God to shed light on your intellect so you can understand it a little bit more. We'll understand it in a much more perfect way when we get to heaven and we see God face to face. But now we do the best we can.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so my brother wants to talk to you.
All right. I'm ready for him too. Thank you.
Hi.
Hi, Theo. Welcome.
I'm receiving my first communion. Do you have any advice?
I do. I've got some advice. I would recommend, number one, that you love Jesus with all your heart and pray every day. Be a good son, a good brother. Mind your mom and dad. Be honest and helpful. And all those things that you know that Jesus would want you to do, and do that every day. Try as hard as you can to be a good boy in every way, every day. And that will help your heart and your soul to be ready to receive Jesus in Holy Communion. How long from now will your Holy Communion be? First Holy Communion.
This week.
Oh, it's coming up.
This weekend.
Mm-hmm. Did you do your first reconciliation, also called confession? Have you done that sacrament yet?
That's next weekend too.
Okay. Okay, good. So you'll be preparing for that beautiful sacrament. And so you can ask your mom and dad about what's called a examination of conscience. That's where you think about maybe if you committed a sin here or there, and chances are whatever sins you've committed would be real small. So think about those and maybe have your list of whatever those little sins might be ready in your mind, so when you go to confession, you'll be able to tell the priest. He'll be so happy, so proud of you. And then you'll be really, really, really ready to receive Jesus in Holy Communion. So I would say spend this time praying and thinking and doing the best you can to be a good boy, good son, good big brother, little brother. Do you have any younger brothers and sisters?
My little brother.
Yeah.
And then my other little brother.
Yeah, it sounds like a big, happy family. So Annalise is older than you. Then you have two little brothers and a little sister younger than you, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's what I would suggest. Prepare your heart and your soul by praying and being helpful and being obedient and being happy. And ask Jesus to get you as ready as you can possibly be, and it's going to be wonderful. Okay?
Okay, thank you.
You are welcome. And tell your mom that I said thank you for letting you guys call me. I think we've talked before. It's been a while, though. Thank you. 888-914-9149. By the way, I got yet another email, Cyrus. You'll love this. From people saying, where is that article on the Kennedys and the priests who talked them into being pro-abortion? I talked about that yesterday or the day before. And we've gotten a bunch of those emails that people are wondering about. So do you want to do the honor, Cyrus, and tell them where they can find it?
Sure. So if you open up your browser, go to relevantradio.com/Patrick. And let's see, I'm doing that right now. And then there is a button that said, you'll see three buttons, about, links, and contact. You want the links button. Mm-hmm. And once you open that up, down at the bottom, it says Sons of Perdition. Click that, and that is the article you're looking for.
Bingo bango. Perfect. Well, thanks, Cyrus. And there it is. I just did it. There it is right there. And if you're saying, what is this all about? Just a quick recap. I talked about an article that appeared in the Wall Street Journal years ago, 15 years ago, and I commented on it. So I have my own little article commentary, and then it leads into the article itself. And it's about how several Catholic priests, and they're named in this article, Father Richard McCormick, Father Charles Curran, Father Joseph Fuchs, Father Robert Drynan, and Father John Courtney Murray, spent a good deal of time with the Kennedys in the 60s trying to talk them into being pro-abortion. You may wonder, why did the Democratic Party become so obsessed with abortion? Well, this has a big role to play because the Kennedy family, especially in the 60s, they were hugely influential. Not really so much anymore, but they certainly were then. And so I believe that these priests, in a calculated, cunning way, figured, and they figured rightly, that if they could turn this particular political dynasty in the direction of accepting abortion, then they would have much more success with others. So that's the essence of this article. So it's all factual. It's historical. Names are named, dates, you name it. It's all in there. And it explains a lot when it comes to why we are where we are, I think, anyway. So check that out. Thanks for that, Cyrus. I appreciate it. 888-914-9149. Why don't we go to Sam now in Austin? Hi, Sam.
Patrick, God bless you. Yes, sir.
Thank you.
This was last month that I was fortunate enough to go before the relic of St. Jude.
Okay.
We were given only less than maybe 30 seconds. I had a few items in my hand, mm-hmm. which I touched to the glass, to the relic. And in my other hand, I had a bag full of religious articles, sacramentals, which I didn't have time to touch, but I was holding them on my in my left hand, and so I don't know whether it's doubt that if were they blessed, were they did they get the grace of the relic.
Well, it's hard to say with certainty, but I will tell you this. So the veneration of a relic, let's say you're venerating a relic of a martyr, you're actually not physically touching the relic itself because it's going to be behind glass in a little reliquary or something larger. So the act of venerating the relic, as the Bible says, that the death of his holy ones is precious in God's sight. So this is part of the biblical reason why we venerate relics. So it's not that you have to have direct contact with the relic itself, but to have something become a relic, and there are different types of relics. So you have a first-class relic, which would be part of the body. Usually it's like a piece of bone, a little fleck of bone or something like that. A second-class relic
which
would be...
Was.
Okay, right. So the second class relic, we're talking about relics themselves now. I'm not yet talking about sacramentals like that you brought up. So let's first talk about relics. So the second class relic is something that the saint had, maybe a piece of clothing or a prayer book or a rosary or something. Those are things that the saint handled physically.
Yes.
And then the third class of relics is something that was touched to the relic or touched to maybe even the saint himself. Like we know in the Bible that there were miracles worked when St. Paul preaching and teaching. People would come up and press cloths to his body, and they would take those cloths and people would be healed. Sick people could be healed from that. Sometimes even just like in the case of St. Peter and Paul, even just their shadow, if their shadow fell, that's like an absence of something, but even the shadow in some cases caused miraculous healings to take place. So what you did is about as best as you can do most of the time, which is to touch a sacramental to a relic, in this case, a first-class relic. So you now have a third-class relic. That's what these sacramentals would be. Now, they don't contain grace. It's not like suddenly now you've got the way the Holy Eucharist has sanctifying grace in it, but rather that these sacramentals have now been set apart for a holy purpose in a particular way to provide what's called prevenient grace or actual grace, it's sometimes called. And what I'm driving at here is that this rosary or the miraculous medal or whatever it was that you touched to the relic doesn't have grace in it, but now it fulfills the function of more powerfully nudging you, your heart, your mind toward God and the things of God so that you can, when opportunities arise, the sanctifying grace in your soul can be intensified. And that last little bit there I think is important so we don't lapse into a kind of superstition thinking that this object has miraculous powers in it of itself. The miraculous power comes from God and through the intercession of the saints. And these are physical reminders, like your wedding ring is a reminder of your wife and the fact that you are in an exclusive union with her. That's how these sacramentals act in our lives. I'll leave it at that. Does that help, Sam?
Yes, thank you. God bless you. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome. Yeah, thank you. All right, we're going to take a break, and we will be back with plenty more ahead. Are we in hour two yet? No, we're not in hour two yet, but
we're
getting there.
Slow down.
We're getting there. We're getting there fast, that's for sure. 888-91. See, I'm slowing it down already, Cyrus. See, 888-914-9149. This is the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app. Call me, 888-914-9149. Thanks to network sponsor PushPay. PushPay offers parishes a platform for tracking donations and sacraments, overseeing schedules, mobile apps to help manage your administrative load, and much more. Info at relevantradio.com/pushpay. That's relevantradio.com/pushpay.
Hey, there's a line open, so now is your opportunity to ask Patrick a question by calling 888-914-9149.
yeah, that works.
All right, so I got that idea. Oh, I lost his email. Where did it go? Jim, one of our listeners named Jim gave me that idea. So thanks, Jim. I thought that was pretty funny.
That is pretty funny. Let's hear it again.
And everybody knows we're all going to start singing along. It's been a hard day's night.
Mm-hmm.
Immediately. But nope, it's not there.
Yeah, and you want it so much. You want it to resolve, and it doesn't. Oh, that's good in a painful sort of way. Thank you for that. Hey, thanks, Jim. Appreciate that. 888-914-9149. Let's get over to Orange County, California now and talk to Mary. Hi, Mary.
Oh, good morning. Thank you.
Sure.
All you do. So I'm a teacher at a school in Orange County, a Catholic school teacher, and I'm struggling with my parents who don't respect the integrity of the class procedures and rules that I have in my classroom. Okay. I feel like they send them to Catholic school for very good reason, the rigorous education, the faith formation, mm-hmm. the discipline, the obedience. Yet I'm not, my parents aren't partnering with me in that regard.
So what grade level are you teaching?
I teach second grade.
Okay. Normally the second graders are pretty into it. They're not like, you know, sixth graders or seventh graders that are just all over the place. What is it that you, go ahead, Mary.
Well, my students love religion, and mm-hmm. that's, I think that's their favorite subject, which is wonderful. And yeah. They are into it. But it's my parents. I'm not feeling that.
Okay. So give me a for instance so that I can understand it more clearly. So like, for instance, when this happens in the classroom and the parents do X or don't do X, so that I could understand.
Okay, so for example, I have very high expectations of my students. I feel like I'm training them for the rest of their lives. And if I give them a consequence, sometimes the parents don't agree with it and think I might be too harsh.
Okay.
And often side with their child. Okay. And
so give me an example of what would be.
Okay. So for instance, I have a student who's being disrespectful and to adults, and okay. I give the student a consequence and maybe writing an apology to the people involved.
Okay.
And they don't do it. It's not followed up.
Okay. So they need to write a little, "Dear Mr. Smith, I'm sorry that I was disrespectful to you when you said something, and I won't do it again. Please forgive me." Something like that?
Right.
Okay. That's, and so there are parents who object to that?
I've had parents who have objected to my consequences.
What do they say? I mean, what's their rationale?
That kids will be kids. And this is kind of how they behave. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they, I need to lighten up because they're only 7 years old.
What would be an example of the disrespect? I mean, is it something like, well, give me an example so I can understand.
Okay, so arguing with the teacher. And speaking to the teacher with inappropriate attitude. Lying to the teacher, not complying, mm-hmm. making excuses.
Yeah, these all seem legitimate and reasonable to me, and things that could easily, that a seven-year-old or second grader anyway, could easily follow. Well, have you talked about this with the principal, Mary, to get some backing?
Yes, and I do have a supportive principal.
Maybe one way to handle it, if you have his or her support, would be to either get, you know, permission to send a memo home to all the kids, and I would send it to all of the parents, not single out anyone in particular, and just say, just a reminder that there are certain etiquettes, certain forms of etiquette in the classroom that we require, being polite, not lying, things like that. And occasionally, if this happens in the classroom, then if you're writing this, then you would say, this is how we handle that. And I ask for your support because this helps to solidify in the minds of these children the idea of virtue and etiquette and respect and things like that. And that way it's now documented and everybody received it, so nobody will feel singled out, even if maybe particular parents might feel that way for good reason. A better way, it seems to me, would be if the principal were to send the letter, and this is a way of backing you and saying the same thing, but saying, I just want to give a periodic reminder that these are the virtues we strive for in this Catholic school. It includes honesty and respect and things like that. And we just want to make sure everybody's on the same page so that parents know what we expect in the classroom, et cetera, et cetera. Do you think that the principal might be willing to either write a letter like that, or that if you wrote a letter like that, that he or she would back you up on it?
Absolutely. That's a great idea. And it's, you know, it's something that I did at the beginning of the year, but we're now near May, and I think it's good to reinforce that once again.
I do too, because you're the teacher and you deserve respect and you deserve obedience, you know, obviously within limits. I remember having a teacher that was rather tyrannical, and my mother took me out of her class and had me change to a different class because the teacher was persecuting me. I don't know why. But that's not what you're talking about. You're talking about basic expectations. And I think that you're...
I believe so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that you're well within your rights to expect even just the basic things and to let the parents know this is what you expect. And if the parents, my gosh, I mean, if parents are saying, well, we don't care if our child lies or not, what does that say about the parents? Or we don't care if our child is respectful to adults or not. I mean, it doesn't reflect well on them.
Right.
Well, I'm so glad, Mary, there are good men and women like you who are doing this often thankless job of teaching our children and spending your energy and your time and forming these young minds. I'm sure it brings you satisfaction. I'm sure it's a very meaningful job for you. Otherwise, you probably wouldn't be doing it. But thank you for doing it.
Well, thank you. And I'm clenching my miraculous medal right now.
Well, Our Lady has promised, hasn't she, that all kinds of wonderful graces are going to be bestowed by God through the practice of this devotion to Our Lady and the Miraculous Medal. So maybe you can invoke some of those graces onto these kids and their parents.
I'll do my best.
All right. Well, hang in there, Mary. I really support what you're doing. I'm glad you're doing it. Your students, I hope, whether now or later, will recognize, you know, what a treasure they have in a good teacher like you.
I appreciate that.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. And if you feel like it, you know, down the road, maybe a month or so from now, just let me know if you did try this technique. How did it go? And hopefully the parents will get in line and the kids too.
Thank you. I will. I'll be in touch.
Okay. Sounds good, Mary. Thank you. How about Jeremy now in Portland? Portland, Maine, that is. Good morning, Jeremy.
Good morning, sir. So I was calling because I just recently have got a better relationship with God, and I'm trying to figure out how I can make my prayer life better because I don't really know how to pray, really. I mean, I'm kind of wondering about that.
Yeah, you can't choose a more important topic in life. And that is how to grow closer to the Lord. So there are different ways to do that. Are you interested in learning how to pray, or do you already pray, or are you just sort of coming back to the art of prayer that you had given up for a while?
So I was a believer once, you know, but then I fell away from it. I had some things go on, and I didn't know how to deal with it. But then lately I've been praying every morning when I get up, every night before I go to bed. But it just seems like I'm saying the same words, and I'm not really connecting with God.
Mm-hmm. I get it. I totally get it. Well, here's what I would suggest. There is a famous Catholic saint. And by the way, I should ask, are you yourself Catholic?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Okay. So you probably will recognize the name Saint Teresa of Avila, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. She was truly a master in terms of prayer, and in particular in what's called mental prayer, which goes beyond the rote prayers. The rote prayers are good. We need rote prayers. The Our Father, the Hail Mary, the Glory Be, the rote prayers that we learn from the time we're children. Those are very good and important things. It's like knowing your times tables and knowing how to add and subtract. You can't do anything more complicated unless you know arithmetic. You need to know these things. So think of the rote prayers as kind of like adding and subtracting and multiplying and dividing, the basics. Without that, you can't go much deeper, but with that, you can go deeper. And she wrote a number of different books. Two that I would recommend to you. One is called The Interior Castle. And that is a description of the different stages of Christian maturity. And the different stages are analogous to entering into deeper and deeper into a castle that has certain rooms within rooms within rooms. The second book that she read, and this might be the first one to read, is called The Way of Perfection. And this is a book just on prayer. How do you go from the basics, adding and subtracting, to deeper prayer, mental prayer, where you're now either meditating upon God and the things of God, or you're contemplating? That's the deepest form of mental prayer. I have a feeling deep inside, oh yeah, that if you get either or both of these books, Jeremy, that you'll be well on your way in that direction. Okay? St. Teresa of Avila, The Way of Perfection is one book, and The Interior Castle, sometimes called The Interior Mansion, is the other book. Check it out and let me know what you think. I'd like to know what you think. I'll be right back.